Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fern. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. So it sounds like we have a pretty good line. There's a little bit of static. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. So the volume is good. That's good. So how are things in Pennsylvania?
It's raining here today. It's been beautiful here the last, 3 or 4 days. It's been great. So now are you in, you're in Northern California, right?
Right. And same here. We had a couple of beautiful days, warm, summery, and today it's cloudy and very humid.
Really, it's just raining here today. We had like 70 with 26% humidity. It was absolutely gorgeous the last like 3 or 4 days here. So,
Wow.
but
Yeah, that's a beautiful area.
are you familiar with this out here at all, or have you always been on the West Coast?
A little bit. I mean, I took a we did a little RV trip and we went through Pennsylvania. I was pretty impressed.
It is, everyone says how green it is here. Depending on what time of year you go through, if you go up through the mountains up around Penn State and stuff, it is really pretty, especially in the fall. The colors are just amazing. So,
Right.
but
Right, and you have that there was some area that people compare to the Grand Canyon.
they call it, I forget the, it's called the Mini Grand Canyon. I've never seen it here. My daughter goes to Penn State, and so we're back and forth across the mountains a little bit, but I've never gone and actually seen it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is a pretty area. But everyone that my daughter was in Southern California for a while and in Mexico, she did a service trip down there, when people come back here, it's just they comment how green it is, where in comparison to other places. So it's kind of funny.
That's great. Well, it's 12 noon,
Okay.
and callers are starting to come on board.
Okay. And was the outline good
So,
enough that I sent you? Was that ample?
very nice, very thorough.
Okay, good.
Thank you once again. So, we'll get started.
Okay.
So, welcome everyone. I'm Fern Alex LaRocca, and this is Paying for College Without Going Broke. And I'm going to be interviewing Fred Amrine of Amrine Financial in Pennsylvania. And he's a chartered financial consultant, and he's also a fellow NAPFA member. And we're going to talk about the education planning process. And Fred has a great reputation in this topic. So, first of all, Fred, I want to thank you for your time for this interview. It's very generous of you.
Fern, thanks for having me.
And I let's start off talking about people are having so much trouble in this economic time, not just saving for retirement, but how are they going to fund their kids' education? Maybe you could address that a bit.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing as you go through this process, depending on where you are, you have to, one, understand that a college education, it's big business. I meant you're going to spend just on your side, again, depending on what area of the country you live in, anywhere from an $80,000 to over $200,000 to fund your children's education. So one of the things I recommend is that you do a timeline with your children's age and what you plan to retire, how old you will be, and it gives you just a feel of, time of recovery and things like that is one of the important things you need to do. Also, when you go through this process, you really need to work. Everyone focuses on the admission process, so the SAT testing or the standardized testing things. And I would tell you actually to take both the ACTs and the SATs as a general statement because it may improve your child's chances to get into or getting into a specific school or get more merit-based money. So that would be another little hint I would tell you to do. You need to look at
Great.
this as a 4-year commitment. All the schools really look at this as a 1-year commitment, and I talk to a lot of financial aid officers, and they have a lot of parents that come in after their junior and senior year and say, I can't afford to send my child here anymore. We've run out of money, or I'm paying too much in loans already. So make sure you take a 4-year view of this commitment. I think that's also another really important part. And you have to understand your budget. As I said earlier, I think focusing on just the admission part is not the right idea, and everyone does get, I want to get into this school or that name school. One of the big things I would tell you, especially for our children that I'm seeing, many more of the careers require postgraduate degrees. So let me give you an example. My daughter is going to be a speech pathologist, but for her to practice, she needs her master's degree. Physical therapy, you're going to need your doctorate now. So if you're going to look at, try to get them to focus on the outcome of the education and what their life's going to be at 25 or 30, if you spend all your money on the front end, they want to go to medical school or law school, they could be carrying significant debt, in their late 20s. So you may really want to look at that, and I try to really get parents to focus on what that outcome looks like. So as a little hint there, too, is on your list of schools when you're applying to schools, another way to improve your chances for more merit-based money is to have at least two or three schools where your child's going to be in that upper 25% of the applicant pool. That will improve your chances for financial aid on the merit-based side, the free money. Another thing you need to really look at is understand your state's specifics on their 529 plans. Are there tax incentives that you can be using? What are the investment options? A lot of times people don't understand the details of that. So let me give you an example. In Pennsylvania, we're one of five states that have what's called tax parity, where there's a tax incentive to put the money in. You get a state income tax deduction. And there's a few other states that offer that. So you really look into that. And also, if a grandparent or a relative is looking to help you, understand their state's rules so they can be the owner, get a tax break, and then maybe your child could be the beneficiary, which also would help you on your financial aid side. So make sure you understand all that. And then so also one last thing on the paying or savings for side, it's just not the financial aid process. So everyone gets wrapped up in filling out the forms and stuff. Paying for college really includes the financial aid process, the different assets and how they're classified, where you have your assets at, and the different tax incentives that are available. And that changes pretty much, it's really regular. I mean, it changes quite often. And that's a really important part you need to really look at.
Very good. Yeah, and I noticed a trend of people going to community colleges for the first 2 years and transferring to, like, a brand-name college. Are you seeing that?
Yes, I really think that's a good option, especially if your child is not sure where they want to go or what they want to be. A lot. Look into your community colleges. A lot of them will have a link program. So they'll be a community college for the first 2 years, and they're linked to specific universities, and they'll accept those credits. Now, you need to be a little bit careful there. Most of the time, they want to have an A or B in those classes. So. But really look into that. That can save you really a lot of money. And even after the fact, as an example, my youngest this year, I have three in college right now. So my youngest is taking some economic courses at our local community college versus at her university, and it's saving a substantial amount of money.
Wow, that's great. Great ideas. All right, so we talked about savings. Now let's talk about this financial aid process. It's kind of scary. It's kind of involved, like you said, there's a lot of forms. Do you have like a procedure, or how do you deal with this?
Yeah, I think there's a few hints that people have to realize in this process. It is fairly complicated, and it could get more complicated. I hate to say that. One of the big things is the government's trying to simplify that, yet the schools want specific information. So there's actually two types of processes. There's the FAFSA process, which is the free application for student financial aid, which every school in the country uses. That's what the government uses to generate some what's called your EFC, your expected family contribution. One thing you need to take, let me take a step back, is that you have to realize that the school years and tax years don't match up. So the best time to look at your financial aid positioning is your second semester sophomore year of high school, your first semester of junior year. Because once you cross over that second semester junior year, that's actually going to be the first tax year that will be used for your financial aid, even though it's 18 months away. So that's an important date that people don't realize. They think it's just in their senior year, but the tax years and school years don't match up. As I said, there's two different processes. There's the FAFSA process, which is the federal government process, and every school uses that. And then the more elite schools have either their own process, or the most common is called the CSS profile. And that's run by College Board, and that will look into more more things in your asset base. The equation or the calculation is basically broken up into four quadrants. There's the parent's income, the parent's assets, the child's income, the child's assets. And each of those have separate rules. Now, when you fill out the FAFSA form, one, that will create one number, and that will be the same for all schools from the FAFSA process. There's one EFC number, and every school will use that. And a big misnomer out there is that you'll hear different financial aid people, oh, you should take everything out of your child's name. That's not necessarily true. You really have to break out, and one of the things we do with our clients is we actually break out the numbers. So we know what the number is generated out of their income number, what's the number generated out of their asset number. So we actually know taking all the assets out of your child's name is not always true. So you need to really know your numbers before you go do that. On the FAFSA side, the things that aren't included that are very important is your retirement accounts are not included, your home equity is not included, and if you're owner of a small family business, it's not included as an asset. What is added back in is any contributions to a retirement account or deferred compensation program is added back in as income, even though on your taxes it doesn't show up. So that's for the federal methodology. On the profile side, all those things are included or reviewed, and different schools use it in different ways. The profile is a general statement. Not every school uses that. There's only about 300 or 400 schools in the country that use that process. Is that it's used by more of the elite-type schools. So your Stanfords, your Ivy League schools all use the CSS profile, which kind of they just try to look at your total net worth and not just your current assets. So just so you know that. The FAFSA is you want to do that online. It's available usually the first year 1-1. You'll have to establish a PIN. And the profile is usually available in early to mid-October because the schools that use that are the ones that usually are competitive for the early decision, early action type of reasons. So if your child is going to go through that early decision process, typically you'll have to do the profile in that early October, early November time frame. Okay? As a general rule, how the game gets played, it's cost of attendance, so that's your tuition, room, board, and books, less your EFC, which is the result of you completing the financial aid forms, equals what you qualify for need-based aid. So as an example, say you're looking at your EFC comes out to be $20,000, and that number changes every year. You have to complete this process every year. So say you're looking at a school that costs, say your EFC number is $25,000. Let's give a different number. And you're looking at a state school that's going to cost $20,000. So 20 minus the 25, you're a negative number. You will not qualify for any need-based aid at that school. Yet if you're looking at a $40,000 school and your EFC number is 25, you will qualify for $15,000 of possible need-based aid in that situation. So, again, the numbers stay the same. Your EFC stays the same. It just depends on what school you are looking to go to as you go through that process. Now, one benefit is...
You do that every year?
Every year. Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the year? Or?
Well, it's done. For an entering freshman into college, it goes... you want to do that usually by late January, early February, and you want to put in an estimate. Usually you don't have your tax information, and then you want to update that as soon as possible. With returning students, usually it's due by, say, April sometime usually.
Okay.
What's also really important, too, is even if you have the financial wherewithal to pay for college, and that's your goal, one of my first clients thought it was a great idea. They had the financial wherewithal to pay. They said, we want their son. They said, look, we think you can have some bite in this game. And they put a goal out there and said, we think you're a 3.5 student. If you get a 3.5 and above, we'll take the loans. If you get a 3.5 and below, the loans are yours. And I thought it was a great concept of putting some real life around it. A great idea.
I love it.
And that's important. Really important because if you fill out the financial aid forms, your child will qualify for a Stafford loan no matter where you fall off for financial aid. And those loans are in the student's name. So there's no co-signing. The student is responsible for those loans.
Okay.
So that's a really great idea to give them some bite in the game. In my case, what we do with our children, they're responsible for their spending money. So depending on what level of spending, they live and their books. So during the summer, they have to work and generate some income. and then they're responsible for their books, and they're, you know, they're going to go out to dinner, you know, once a week, or they're going to go to the, you know, the movies and stuff like that. And usually that number is around the $3,000 number is a good number to try to get to.
That's a great idea, because I know a lot of my clients struggle with that, like some boundaries around that, like how much to really support them. They want them to go through college, but yet they want them to contribute in some way. So that's a great idea of how to structure that.
Yeah, but it gives them some bite in the game, and I just think it's important that they, you know, it gets them closer to reality.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yep.
That's important. Okay, so now you mentioned that Stafford loans, people have talked about Pell Grants and work study and all of these tax credits and college savings plans, and it's hard to for people to get a grip on how this all comes together. They all work together for to get the kid through college.
Yeah, that's an important part. What happens in the process is when you complete the forms, when you're an entering freshman, you'll get what's called an award letter, usually by April 1st, which will break out usually the cost of attendance. That would be another recommendation I would tell you to do is build your own cost of attendance. So, you know, tuition, room, and board is pretty an easy number. But if you live far away from a specific school, the schools have an average number, which will include different things. But, like, you know, your cost of attendance should include the travel, of them getting back and forth, how expensive.
Right.
If that first semester, too, doesn't mean just warn everyone, that first semester for both the child and parent, at least I've found, is very difficult emotionally. So just be ready for, you know, if you have an entering freshman going in, that first semester on both sides can be very emotional. What's not your number that can run thousands of dollars more is your travel back and forth. So when you go to visit them, if you have to go a distance, you have to stay overnight. And now when you go to pick them up to take them out to dinner, now I have all girls, but, you know, I've heard the horror stories where they show up, they take the son out, the son has three friends, and that dinner that was going to be $100 becomes $300. So just be ready for those little things there. And I've lived through where that emotional first semester can be pretty brutal. My middle one was homesick, and she came home quite often. So just be aware of that. As you go through that, when you get your award letter, you need to break out that. So you'll have the Stafford loan. So the first part, as we talked earlier, you know, when you apply for that school in that upper tier, where your child's going to be in that upper tier, you can get substantial, you know, merit-based money, and hopefully that's the money that's free that you won't have to repay. It could be grants, scholarships. Now, usually there's strings attached to that information, so you'll need a specific GPA. Now, depending on the school, some schools say it's required that you have a 3.0 and above to keep that scholarship. If you get below the 3.0, some schools eliminate the whole thing or some will prorate it. So say you get a 2.8, some schools will prorate that. Some schools will say, no, we're going to take that away. You know, well, if that's a $10,000 scholarship per year, so it was a $40,000 commitment, and your child gets a 2.8, well, that was a $30,000 mistake if it's taken away. So you needed to really talk to them about the money. I recommend a lot of times to really, as I said, focus on the outcome, but have conversations of what are we trying to get out of this. You know, another little hint, because graduation rates are so poor, another thing you should look at your schools your children are going to be attending, and the schools have this information, is what's the graduation rate for 4, 5, and 6 years? Because if they're there an extra year, you know, depending on the cost of that college, that could be a substantial mistake. But have those type of discussions with your child. Understanding the tax things that you'll change. Now, this year we have the Opportunity Credit, which was a great credit. It was for 2009 and 2010. There's talk that could be extended. That replaced the old HOPE credit. But what was nice about that income level went up to 160 and phased out in total at 180, which was a substantial increase for, you know, the middle income, middle and above income levels. And also, it extended to all 4 years and not just freshman and sophomore year. So some of the tax codes, make sure you tell your, if you're a CPA, if you work with a CPA, make sure you detail all the things out for them and break out what your cost of attendance is, the schools and stuff like that, the money that you spent. Using your 529 plans the right way. Usually I recommend on the 529s, because different schools handle it different ways, is that you pay the bill and get reimbursed directly from the 529 and not have the money sent to the schools. For a variety of reasons. Sometimes the schools can't handle where it's coming from and stuff like that. So I usually recommend that you pay the money to the school and get reimbursed directly from the 529 plan if you have that. Also, really be careful with your your retirement accounts, if you're planning to use that. You need to be really careful there. If you're a younger parent and you have children that aren't there, a Roth, if you can contribute to a Roth IRA, a great place to do that because of certain things there. But just be really careful. And just a little other thing, there's a lot of financial advisors that are in this business or try to be in this business. And they're just out there, as you're hearing as I go through this description, you have to open your entire financial life.
Right.
And when you go through that, there's a lot of people that will take advantage of that situation. So really be careful. And you know, with Fern and I, we're both fee-only people. There aren't a lot of fee people that I'm aware of that are in this business. But be really, really careful when you go through that, because the major things, and you'll see this, they'll try to put you into an annuity or life insurance product that may not be appropriate. It really comes down to really have to looking at your 4 years of cash flow and the commitment that you're ready to make to your child and where you're going to fall out overall. Okay.
All right, a couple of points on that. I have been helping clients that are having a difficult time talking and revealing to their children how much money they make and how much they're willing to help them out, and really getting the kids involved in the financial process. I had one woman that did everything for the kid and wouldn't allow him to see any of the paperwork. So maybe you can address some of your situations you've seen with that.
Well, see, I that's a dilemma that I face all the time, because actually the process is set up for the children to actually do all the work, and I really have a major problem with that. So our clients, for the most part, we handle all this, all the email addresses we write down are directly back to the parents, because I don't think it's the children's business to know that. I really do think you have to have that conversation, not just on what you can afford, but also, as I said earlier, the outcome, because a lot of parents don't do that. And so, and you can talk in general terms. So what's the outcome of the education? We make about this much money. We have this lifestyle. If you're going to be doing a certain job, well, that job only pays X. Part of our whole process, we have a whole career section and a whole salary information that we provide to our clients.
Wow, that's great.
That's really important. It helps them in that conversation.
Yes.
So I really think you can talk vague terms. I mean, we make, you know, 120, or we make $200,000, and we live in this house. And to do that, you want to become a teacher. That's a great career, and that. But you're going to be kind of limited to be making $60,000-$70,000 a year. You won't be able to file this lifestyle. And I think you have to have those conversations. A big point that I try to talk to parents is from that high school to college time frame, is that you move from, you know, that sergeant at arms, you know, really trying to keep your finger on them, to being more of a mentor. And I think that transition, instead of telling them what to do, you need to ask them a bunch of questions. So, hey, what are you thinking about this? What are you thinking about that? And let them kind of develop their own path, but with your direction of how you ask your questions. I think it's a good way to approach that method.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I've used a lot of the coaching conversation model to help the parents do just that, talk with the clients on that level. And a lot of them, I think, don't realize that the kids don't understand the value of the careers that they choose, and like you said, how it connects to the lifestyle that they may want.
I think that's the biggest mistake that most of us make, especially, you know, it's a different, here's what's changed. I'm 50. So the biggest change here, when you look at it from our generation to our children's generation, is that when we went to school, you know, you're spending $3,000-$4,000 a year, you're going to come out and make, you know, $15,000-$18,000. So the payback there was 1 to 3, 1 to 4.
Right.
Our children now, you're spending $50,000, at least here on the East Coast, for the private institutions. You'll be lucky if it's a 1 to 1 ratio. So from a pure financial standpoint, it doesn't always make sense. The other way to look at this, when you talk to your child, I mean, from a pure, as you know, as you hear me, I really look at this as an investment in your child, and that's another way to talk to them. But
right.
But think of it this way, from a practical standpoint, you're ready to make a $100,000 to $200,000 investment in an 18-year-old. Would you do that in business?
Right.
I think it's a really good way to look at it, and it kind of shocks if you take a step back, you wouldn't do it, but that's what you're doing, even though you love them to death and all that stuff. But I think it's really important to take a step back and look at it that way. And maybe that's the way you should approach it to them. I actually spoke at a recent high school, and I said, look, if you say you're the parents, look at your friend next to you. Would you give them $100,000 for the next 4 years and trust them? And I said, that's what your parents are doing to you. So it's a good way to approach it.
That's great. And now, you know what's interesting is this trend for the kids to go to school instead of 4 years, 5 and 6 years. Now, I haven't seen any statistics on that, but I know on the West Coast out here, that's becoming very familiar. And, you know, the kids think it's less pressure, that they can handle maybe a small job and also go to school. And yet, you know, for the parents, the financial burden is drawn out longer. Have you seen that?
Yeah, you really need to be careful. I mean, I can give you some of the numbers. Nationally, and again, I'm not going to be specific, but nationally, the numbers to graduate, to leave high school and graduate in 4 years is about 38% to 40%, which is kind of sad. After 5 years is about 52%, and after 6 years is about 63%. So only about 63% of the students after 6 years will graduate. So when you look at those tuition dollars and what it costs to stay there longer is a substantial burden. And one of the big things that you know, and granted, it's changing right now with, you know, a few years ago, money was easy. It's becoming a little bit harder to do that. So you need to be, I'm sorry, I just got beeped there. It's a little harder to do that. But one of the things, as I said earlier, you really need to do a 4-year cash flow as you go through this to see what the debt level is going to be. And as I said also, is what's the outcome of the education? Because many, like as an example, my daughter, you know, her undergrad wasn't going to give her a job. I mean, she needed to get her master's. Now, she was kind of lucky in the sense that she did a year of service and got a full scholarship for her master's, which is not that common. But, you know, these are the things that you need to have that discussion is, you know, do I send them to an Ivy League school, yet they want to become, you know, they want to go to medical school? And, you know, where's all that money come from, even if you've done a good job saving? So looking at the outcome of the education, I think, is really important. And how do we get to where you want to be at 25? And just as a little note there, too, I really think it's just as important to work hard to get them into the school they want, but also by the end of their freshman year to have an understanding of what they want to be. So when you're entering, it's okay if they don't know, but in your decision process, there's three parts of that decision. There's the financial side, there's the environment, big school, small school, how far away from home, and then the academics. What's the school good at? Two little points. I would tell you to visit the career centers when you visit your colleges, and then also when you visit the colleges, make sure they're in session. So if you take a trip and you visit a school, and we really like this place, and then that's the school becomes the top choice. But when you come on campus, it's a different game. The schools are different during the summer versus in the fall or in the spring.
Good point.
So a good thing there is to visit the school. And for parents, weather can be a big factor. So if it's a rainy, damp day, that may affect what your vision of the school or their vision is of the schools.
Right.
But make sure you visit the schools while they're in session. It's really, really important.
That's a good point. Very good point. Okay. So we have a few minutes left. So, wow, this is like a lot of great information here, specifically like taking that ACT and SAT, both of them, the timing, remembering that the school year and the tax year don't match, to be prepared for that. The point you made about the first year seemed very emotional, and to be on the lookout for that and take advantage of that new opportunity credit. And you said that opportunity credit replaced, what was the other one?
It was the old Hope credit. The old Hope credit was just 1 year. It was just for your freshman and sophomore year. Now the opportunity credit, now I'm hoping they'll extend that. Now it is available for 2010, but I'm not sure about 2011 going forward, but there's talk that it will be. So I can't say that that's going to happen.
Great. That's great information. Wonderful. Now, before we wrap up, why don't you tell the callers how they can contact you?
You can just send us an email at info@amrinefinancial. So let me, AMREIN, financial. It's all one word, .com. That's our website. We're in the midst of updating that. I was hoping to get that done before this call. We were unable to do that. But we also have some additional webinars on things that are coming up, topics that will be posted. We should have the website completed by the 14th is my goal, but you may want to dial in there. And if you drop me an email, what I'll send to everyone is a newsletter that we hand out at our presentations here in the Philadelphia area is where I'm basically located. And I speak at a lot of the schools in the area, that will detail out what you need to be doing both on an academic basis and on a financial aid basis from birth up to senior year in high school. So it's a really nice roadmap that would be available to your listeners that we'd be happy to send out to them via the email.
That's great, Fred. And do you give free consultations, or do you work with people out of state or virtually?
We do work with people out of state. Typically, we have an input sheet that we'll send them. We'll briefly describe our services. We really do a comprehensive job. When the website's up to date, you'll actually see all the services that we provide and can show you what we cover there. It's very encompassing, comprehensive, in the sense that we do the EFC calculation. We show you we're going to fall out for financial aid. One of the things I didn't cover is we actually have in our software is what the school typically meets of the need, how much of it will be gift aid. So we actually can give you a ballpark of where you're going to fall out for financial aid and how that will change over the 4 years. So maybe you have a child coming in or a child that's leaving and how that numbers will work for that child. So it really is comprehensive. We've taken a very business approach. As I said, we look at this as an investment and have run a cash flow that looks like that. And it shows you also the loan options that you'll have and things like that. And usually what we do is go through that process, and then there's usually about an hour and a half consultation on the back end, and then you have phone access after that for about 6 months.
Excellent. You know, I really want to thank you so much for all this information and to let all the callers know that Fred has an excellent reputation on this topic, and a lot of advisors are going to him for info on this. And again, you can reach him at info@mreinfinancial.com. That's mreinfinancial.com. And this call is going to be recorded, and the audio file will be available for all of you at my website at wholeheartedway.com. That's wholeheartedway. And I have a section under retirement planning called educational planning with a lot of articles on education planning. And I will be posting the audio file there and hopefully more information from Fred as it becomes available. And I can also coach people to work with their kids and set up some systems before they get involved with Fred. I'd be glad to help with that too. So we're a little bit past the half hour. Fred, I want to, again, thank you so much for your time. This is a wealth of information here. I'm going to have to re-listen to this and digest it a bit more.
Okay, Fern. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I enjoyed speaking.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Have a great day, everybody.
All right.
Talk to you
soon.
Bye-bye.